You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Have you heard? We're having our first ever Producers Perspective Super Conference right here in New York City, November 11th and 12th of this year. Broadway producers, directors, writers, all speaking to you and telling you the secrets of their success. Come, go to theproducersperspective.com and sign up.
I want to be a producer with a hit show on Broadway. I want to be.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Producers Perspective Podcast. I am Ken Davenport, and we're back to weekly episodes of the podcast, so make sure you subscribe on your favorite listening platform to make sure you get all the new episodes delivered right to you. We have a whole bunch of very exciting guests coming up, including today's. So as you all know, one of my favorite things to do is talk to people in high-ranking positions in our industry that have come from high-ranking positions in other industries or related ones. Today, I have just one of those folks in my office. She was previously the president of worldwide music for Sony Pictures Entertainment. She was on Billboard's Power 100 multiple times. Now she is the president of Columbia Live Stage, which is the new live theatrical productions division of Sony Pictures, and one of the lead producers on this season's Groundhog Day. Please welcome Ms. Leah Bollock. Welcome, Leah.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
So you've always had a thing for live entertainment. So tell me how this started for you in live entertainment. Where'd you get the bug?
From live entertainment. I guess I actually got the bug from the fact that my parents took me to theater from the time I was really, really, really young. Like, actually, literally, one of my first memories is sitting in a theater. It was like a really small theater. It's a children's theater in downtown Denver, which doesn't exist anymore. And I remember sitting in the theater, and there was a forest on stage, and the house lights went down, and the stage lights came up, and a beautiful girl was walking across the stage, and suddenly one of the trees had eyes and they opened. And that freaked me out so much. I was screaming. I was 2 years old. I was like really, really too young to be in the theater, but it really upset me. And it is one of my most profound, lasting memories. My mother remembers she took me out of the theater. It's fine. But it was also really magical and really intense. And I guess that, you know, even though it was terrifying, it was very exciting.
So you were terrified into the theater.
I was terrified into the theater.
New audience into the theater. Good. Scared them to death.
Frightened them to death. But yeah, my parents took me to theater, to concerts, to all of that all the time growing up. And I think I really developed a love of it at that point. And yeah.
But the theater wasn't your first foray into the business,
no,
of music.
No, I started working through an odd set of circumstances. I ended up working touring as a sound engineer with bands when I was actually pretty young, and did that for a little while, and then decided that I sort of wanted more, slightly more settled life than touring with rock bands. So when I was about 19, I moved to New York and started working in the theater with a sound operator, a sound, and with aspirations being a sound designer, kind of doing whatever sort of odd jobs you could do. I worked for doing sound for fashion companies or doing sound for industrials for McDonald's or, you know, whatever there was, but also working, doing a lot of off-Broadway, and then eventually became a sound designer, and then eventually designed sound on Broadway. And that was decades ago.
So let's just go back a little bit, because you said, oh, when I was very young, I toured with bands, and then you were like, I thought you were going to say, oh, yeah, when I was 20-something. And then you said you moved to New York when you were 19. So how old were you when you started touring with rock band?
I was 16.
16.
Yeah.
And I heard a rumor that you graduated from high school at 15. Is this true?
Yeah, I finished high school. I finished all the credits. I sort of tested. So I finished the credits.
So obviously a very gifted young mind. And you were like, Mom and Dad, I'm going to tour with rock bands at 16. What made you decide that you wanted, what made you decide to do that? Like, why did you want to do that so badly versus you would think the normal trend would be Harvard or Yale or?
No, I think I wanted to be in music, and I think I wanted to be a performer, but that wasn't really my gift. So, you know, I don't have a facility for writing music, which I think is part of the reason that I have so much respect for people who do. I did learn to play music, but again, being a performer, I wasn't really good enough to do that. But I actually really understood sound and move and how the things should go together and how it should mix and all of that. And that actually came very naturally and easily to me. And I think one of the things that has probably been good in my career and good for me is that I'm pretty good at saying, I'm not very good at that, and maybe I should pursue that. And I've tried to really focus on my strengths and find joy and satisfaction in things that I'm also good at, as opposed to trying to struggle. I would have had the worst life ever if I had really tried to be a musician playing somewhere, because I just didn't really have that gift.
And did you try writing music? You said you were very good at it.
Yeah, I mean, in taking like music classes in school and things like that, it just wasn't something that ever came naturally to me.
This is such great advice, because I remember thinking the same thing when I was acting, that, oh, probably do this, and yeah, you know, when I'm 40-something years old, I'll get a job at some regional theater paying $200 a week, and I'll be excited about that, but really being, you know, achieving excellence is probably something I'll never achieve, so I made this conscious decision to pursue something else. I think that's such great advice for those folks that are out there struggling at something. There are other areas of the business that
you can be incredibly satisfying, and I'm really, really happy that I made those choices. So yeah.
So you climb up the ranks of sound design here on Broadway and off Broadway, and then somehow you end up on the other coast.
Yeah. Well, what happened was I did a lot of work, and it was an incredibly great time. I was in New York from like 1983 to 1993, and it was there were fantastic things going on Broadway. I worked at Playwrights Horizons, where Andre Bishop was then the artistic director, and I worked for a lot of really, really interesting, great people, and did a lot of shows, and worked with Norman Rameau and Craig Lucas. Norman is a director who died a number of years ago of AIDS. And Craig Lucas is very well known and continues to write today. And so I had done a number of shows with them as the sound designer. And they got this opportunity to make a movie called Long Canyon. And they said, Norman said, oh, you should be our music supervisor. And I said, oh, okay, that's great. I have no idea what that is, but sure, I can do that. But since I'd always, helped them with music that we used in plays and worked together pretty closely, it was a great opportunity to go into this whole other medium. So we did that film, and it was incredibly well received. It was actually at the very first Sundance that ever existed, and Sex Lies the Videotape won the, main festival award and won the audience award. And it was subsequently nominated and got a nomination for Bruce Davison for an Academy Award. And so it got a good bit of acclaim, and that was really, really exciting. And then The Deep Prelude to a Kiss on Broadway, and then that was going to be made into a film. And again, I'm just like, oh, you should be my music supervisor. And this movie was being done by 20th Century Fox, so it wasn't an indie film, it was a studio film. And even though, as I subsequently found out, they absolutely underpaid me, paid me nothing compared to what other music supervisors got, it was so much more money than I had made when I was designing sound on Broadway, that I thought, I think I should go into the film business now. So sound designers are sort of at the bottom of the design pay scale, and they make considerably more clearly now than we're making in the 80s, but in the 80s, it wasn't great, even on Broadway. So it just seemed like the right thing to do at that time. So I decided in 93 to California and start working.
While you were working for all these great people and all these great theaters and for producers, did you ever think, oh, someday I want to come back and do this? These people that are signing my checks right now, I want to be one of those guys that signs checks.
I was always very ambitious to sort of learn more about the entire business and be a bigger part of the process. I will say that one of the things that has helped me so much now coming back as a producer, the fact that I spent 10 years in tech, the fact that I, have been on a ladder running cable, in theaters, in Broadway theaters, certainly oddly helps understand the totality of the process for when you come back. I mean, I love the process of making a show and having worked with so many directors over the years, both in the theater and subsequently in the movie business, has, I think, really, really helped me to be able to work with directors and creative teams from a producing standpoint, because you've experienced a lot of different, every situation is different. Every creative team is different. Every show is different and having a set of problems, but having a real wealth of experience with being able to support creative teams at the same time that you're sort of managing the show, I think is really important and really understanding, I think, helps.
Yeah, I find that some of the most valuable lessons I've learned is that because I've been in the room where it happens, so to speak.
Right.
The creators and the designers just look at you a little differently, knowing that, oh, this is a person that's been through this process and on a ladder before themselves.
Yeah.
Great advice you got back then? Did you get any great advice from any of these Andre Bishops of the world that you remember today as you were coming up?
I think I got a lot. I don't know that I can distill it into one particular moment. I will say I got a lot of great advice, and I learned from a lot of, great experience and, working on shows that would be, with Wendy Wasserstein. I worked on the ID Chronicles the first time I did this done. I don't know, it was just a really, really great time, and I'm sorry to be so unspecific.
Well, I want to ask you a question actually about sound design while we're there for a minute, because you left here when sound design was in one place on Broadway. You've come back now, it's obviously much different.
Oh yeah, it's much more sophisticated. I don't think I can be a sound designer now.
Do you feel it's the sound of Broadway theaters is better now than it was? Do you miss some of the less technological advances, if you will, more acoustic sounds?
I worked for Scott Lehr. I was his assistant for a long time, and he's obviously still, very, very busy and incredibly successful and prolific. And the truth is that I think all sound designers, really good ones, have slightly different approaches to how they deal with reinforcement. And then other sound designers, come from a place of really amazing effects work or really amazing, or they post music as well as design and sound. So sound design is slightly, they're all a little different. I think some people's approach is a lot more, strongly reinforced, which I do prefer myself a slightly more natural sound to things, but I also recognize, the need to make it obvious. But I think it's possible to have both. I think if it feels too in your face and too, really like, I think that's actually less good sound design as opposed to less good technology.
So you move out to LA, you enter the film world, and you end up working for a major studio in a very corporate position. Coming from a very independent world here, you were a freelance sound designer here, right?
Right.
What was that transition like, going from one where you never know where your next job is going to be?
I did freelance for a long time when I first went to LA. I think I have a good understanding of how music gets put together, even though I didn't create it, which, again, when you take that into the world of producing, I don't feel the need to create it. I just wanted to understand how together and to help the people who do create it put it together in the best way.
So do you think there's a big similarity between the composition of a film score and the composition of a theatrical score? Can it be looked at in the same way?
I think there are definitely similarities. I mean, good film scoring does do storytelling, and clearly score for Broadway school is all of its
reason. We don't have many people make that transition, right? We don't have a lot of film scorers coming to Broadway for some reason, even though they write some of the most luscious, beautiful melodies and scores around. Why?
I think because it...
Besides the pay rate?
Well, the pay rate can be good if it runs. I think that part of it is because so much of it is lyric-based. Maybe part of it is that it's not just instrumental thematic ideas, but it's actually, I don't know. It's a good question, actually. An excellent question. And maybe there will be more of that. I guess there have been a few people who've tried, but not a lot who've actually done it with any great amount of regularity.
When you were working for a big studio, obviously you saw a lot of movies come together from nothing, right? You see an idea then sprout into something much, much bigger. Is there anything that Broadway can learn from the developmental process of Hollywood? Anything that they do that is better than we do? One thing I've noticed is that it's rare that one screenwriter write a movie from start to finish, right? Come up with the idea, and then there's just one writer taking it all the way through.
Right.
Hollywood often has, writers get fired every day. You bring on someone to do a ghosting. And I'm sometimes amazed that one writer can ever do anything, even in our world. Do you think that's something that we should look at here in the theater, having multiple writers on a project?
I don't know that that would work as well in the theater. And I think, arguably there are certainly writers in Hollywood who would greatly object to the fact that it's done that way as much as it is there. I think film is really a director's medium. Television tends to be the writer-producer's medium, and theater actually very much is a busy writer's medium. I think there are spectacular directors, amazing, brilliant theater directors, but I think that sort of singularity of voice and vision with the writer and composer is very bedrock in the theater, and I don't know what that would be like. It could be good, to have some of that. But I think it tends to be really that sort of singular voice that is part of what it is. For better and worse.
Anything else now that you've been working here as a producer on Broadway that you're like, oh, if it did the way we did it in Hollywood, this would be so much easier?
I think there are definitely things in the world of. I think there's a level of sophistication in marketing and sales and, those areas that I would say that Hollywood has spent, and that sort of broader media conglomerate entertainment base out there has spent a lot of time figuring things out, audience research, how to maximize your messaging and how to improve your messaging. And I think that those things, that those areas, there's a lot to learn from.
You're a fan of audience research and testing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to me about research and testing is that it's just more information. You can decide to say, oh, I think that's stupid and not do it, or I completely disagree with it. It's a choice, but to not have the information seems like you're sort of cutting yourself off. And I admit the movie industry, lives or dies on research and tracking and, test screenings and all of that. And I think that there are times when maybe it's too much in the movie business. Although I will say that, you know, over 20 years that I worked in a studio, more often than not, it was pretty accurate. You know, on the aggregate, sure, there are big hits and big pieces, and like every movie producer will tell you, oh, this movie that tanked scored a 98, this movie that scored a 40, you know, $200 million. There are always outliers. On the whole, it was usually somewhat involved, accurate, and useful. So I love information, and I love other people's experiences, and I love finding out how different people would approach different things, because I think all of that informs, you know, my choices and how I do the best job possible. And it is a completely transformative. I'm really interested in learning as much as I can, both about, you know, the way things have been done traditionally, and also being able to see if there are, as you say, things from my other experiences in other industries and how that form doing this.
So it wasn't too long ago where not many of the Hollywood studios had theatrical departments. Now they all do, including, of course, your. What made Sony all of a sudden go, okay, guys, guess what? We need our own live theatrical division. Was there anything that you could point to that made them want to do this?
Well, Michael Lenton, who has actually just left Sony, I talked to him in probably 2011, and Sony had been, we've been licensing, you know, a show here or a show there, or investment is there, or there wasn't really a strategy behind it. I think he really wanted to look at creating a strategy for us for it, so that it wasn't so piecemeal. And I, because I had a background in the theater, had been talking to him on and off about that, and he felt like it was important if you were going to be a media company to be involved in network businesses in India and across the world, and, you know, and if you were going to be sort of operating on the same scale, that it was an important part of sort of overall plan. So I think that, I mean, he's really the one who started it, and then I volunteered, given that I had a background in it and really loved the theater, and, you know, we'll say missed the theater greatly, and was really excited to try to start creating an overall sort of strategy for, you know, both our properties and produce, moving into producing.
And do you find, as you've gotten back to Broadway as a movie company executive now, you're no longer under, the movie company part of you was embraced by the community? Were people nervous, oh, here comes big bad Sony? What was the experience for you stepping back into the ring?
I'm hopeful that there were a number of people who I still, you know, still knew from when I was here in the 80s. And hopefully that those people were incredibly nice about the fact that I was. And, you know, it's important to me that I know all of the studios have sort of different approaches to how they're, you know, handling their businesses and, you know, structure. It is really important to me because I know how vital the theater community is and what a strong community it is and how many, like, smart, wonderful, you know, people there are in it. I really want to make sure that we can be a part of the community. And like I said, you know, before, I want to make sure that we integrate into the community as opposed to coming in as a...
Well, I can certainly speak to that, because when I reached out to you about wanting to be involved in Groundhog Day, first of all, you answered my email like in 15 seconds and even came to see me. So I just felt like a non-movie company experience, which I very much appreciated, because I do think there has been fear over the last decade as we've seen these big corporate giants march towards the East Coast of, oh god, we're going to be taken over by these giant publicly traded companies with all this money behind them. So for me, your approach, it meant a lot to me. So what, as a lead producer now on Broadway, what do you spend most of your time doing? You spend your time, obviously, you're not raising tons of money, I would think. You have some big pockets there. Is it marketing? Is it creative relations? Is it casting? What do you do? What do you think a producer's primary responsibility is
I think it is all of those things. I mean, ultimately, the first, you know, it starts with creating first part of it and the sort of primary part of it, without which you can have no marketing if you don't have a good show. So I think a lot of my time, you know, is spent on creating the shows, finding the talent, working with the talent to, like I said, give them the support and the resources they need to be able to create good work. And then, yes, marketing and making sure that shows together the right way. I think that, you know, all shows go through different, you know, phases of what you do as a producer, and you know this as a producer. There are, you know, times when, yes, you're really, really focused on it. Because I like tech, I sit through tech. I sit through previews. I think you have to see the show play every night in order to move the show. It's not like working on a movie where I can sit in front of a computer and watch scenes on movie over and over again and see what's better. I think it's to be present. And the marketing is something that starts before you go into rehearsals and lasts, you know, long after the show starts, you know, it's sort of now up and running. So there are all of those parts are important, and the job changes depending on what phase the show is in or what phase you're in.
Biggest surprise about producing on Broadway? Moment you witnessed something, you were like, huh, here's something I didn't expect to be doing or didn't expect to happen.
There were so many. There were a lot of surprises.
Okay, so this is a brand new question here on the producer's perspective. You're obviously a very successful person. You've been very successful in a whole different positions. In music on the West Coast, here on Broadway, the East Coast, sound design. Do you have any life hacks, anything that you do that you attribute to your success? It could be yoga, it could be meditation, it could be drinking lots of water every day, it could be app on your phone, anything that you do that helps.
I like having time early in the morning when it's still quiet and phones aren't going, when I can think and sort of dream a little bit and strategize and organize my mind before I have a lot of other responsibilities. And I think finding time when you can not be reactive is really some people do it in different ways. They go to yoga or they go to meditation. And for me, I just like being awake with a cup of coffee and it's sort of dawn and kind of quiet. It's very nice. It depends on the coast, actually. I have to tell you this. When I was living in LA, is a very, very early town. So in LA, I would get up at like 5. New York, it's more like 6. It's a little later in New York. New York starts later, but also the reality is when you're in LA, you're already 3 hours behind. And if you're working in the UK, you're 8 hours behind when you wake up. So it's
like a groundhog experience. The old deck must have been quite a few months for
it.
You.
Was, I actually had a conference call discussing, you know, like notes and ideas and thoughts and some creative stuff that Matthew wanted to do. I had a conference call at 2:30 in the morning. It's just the only time everyone else could do it, and I didn't want to be an impediment, and I wanted to hear what Matthew wanted, you know, to get achieved. So
so funny you say that, because I often find I'm the last person to say yes to a conference call, because I'm the same way. I don't want to be the impediment. The creatives can all get together at a certain time. I'll figure it out.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, my last question, which is my genie question. I want you to imagine that the genie from Aladdin comes to visit you and says, I want to thank you for your dedication to the theater, and I want to grant you one wish. What's the one thing that drives you crazy about Broadway? It gets you angry or so nice. I told everyone already, you came to my office to talk to me about Groundhog Day early in the process. You're so generous with your time. What's the one thing that makes you so mad that you ask this genie to wish away? Tim Rice said, sippy cups.
I don't know if it's nice. You know, part of it is that I'm a little bit like, do you know the parable of the scorpion and the frog? So there's a frog and a scorpion on one side of the room. And for me, like, parables and those things, like, rule my life. I'm Scorpion and Frog on one side of the river. Frog's getting ready to swim across the river. And Scorpion says, Frog, take me across the river. And the frog says, I'm not going to take you across the river on my back. You'll sting me and you'll kill me. And why would I do that? Scorpion says, No. Why would I sting you? If I stung you, you would sink and we would both drown. And that wouldn't work for me at all. That would be terrible. I just want to get across the river. Frog's like, okay, well, that makes sense. Okay, so Frog gets some water. Scorpion gets the frog's back. Frog's swimming across the river. Suddenly, in the middle of the river, the scorpion stings him. And the frog is paralyzed, and he's, like, dying. And he said, why did you do that? And the scorpion said, I can't help it. It's my nature. And so I guess a lot of the things, at least so far, maybe, you know, in a few years hence, I will have things that I'll be able to say, like, that's a complete frustration, and I hate that. Or maybe, like, when I walk out the store, I'll think, oh, I should have said that. But I right now, most of the things that I have found frustrating, I'm a little bit like, I mean, these are things that you need to just understand are part of the challenges of any business, and every business has them. The movie business is rife with challenges, and the music business is rife with challenges, and the theater business is as well. But it's a magnificent, magnificent world. Filled with really, really exciting people, smart, unique, interesting, creative. And anytime you put that many strong personalities in one, 15 square block radius, there are going to be, challenges and things that are frustrating. But you sort of take the good with that. And I, couldn't feel more fortunate and be more excited about the possibilities.
Well, that's the best non-answer for that question I have had to date. I love it. It's a very zen, I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning answer. Just not let it bother you, because we're all really, frankly, blessed to be working in this business. So thank you for being here and working in this business. And thanks to all of you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. We'll see you next time.
Producers Perspective Super Conference. Early bird pricing ends this week, this Friday, July 14th. Go to theproducersperspective.com and sign up.
I'm gonna be a producer. Look out, Broadway, here I come.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.